From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Our opponents can't campaign on jobs or health care or fiscal responsibility. Instead, George Bush, who promised to become a uniter, has become the great divider.
Senator John Kerry wins big on Super Tuesday, taking 9 of 10 primaries. Dean took his own state, though he's out of the running, Vermont. And Senator John Edwards will drop out today. In Haiti, we'll talk. We'll look at the new self-declared military head of Haiti, Guy Philippe.
The U.S. is arming the rebels. The U.S. is arming Guy Philippe. The U.S. is arming Chamblain. Those guys are criminals.
We'll talk to the Consul General of Haiti, who says Jean-Bertrand Aristide is still president. And we'll ask, what is the international law that applies here?
President Aristide is still president of Haiti. The Consul General is right. International law prohibits recognizing governments that take power through a coup.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Senator John Kerry effectively wrapped up the Democratic Party presidential nomination last night by winning 9 of 10 states on Super Tuesday, including New York and California. His top opponent, John Edwards, is scheduled to announce today he's dropping out of the race. Edwards won no races on Tuesday. Former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, who's not running anymore, won his home state of Vermont, blocking Kerry's attempt of a Super Tuesday sweep. President Bush last night called Kerry to congratulate him on his victories. We'll have more on this in a few minutes. In Iraq, the death toll in yesterday's coordinated attacks in Karbala and Baghdad has topped 180. Another 400 people have been injured. The attacks came while Iraqi Shiites celebrated one of the holiest days of the year, Ashura. It marked the deadliest day in Iraq in the 11 months since Baghdad fell. And in Pakistan, the death toll has reached 40 in another attack on Shiite Muslims. In Haiti, rebel leader Guy Philippe announced yesterday, quote, "The country is in my hands." He claimed he was the chief of Haiti and that he would oversee the reformation of the Haitian military. He also threatened to arrest Prime Minister Ivan Neptune, whose home has already been torched and looted. The New York Times reported Haiti, quote, seemed to be falling into the clutches of a self-appointed armed junta. The U.S. made efforts to distance itself from Philippe and other gang leaders. A State Department spokesman said, quote, "The rebels do not have a role in the political process." And Haiti's former dictator Jean-Claude Duvalier, better known as Baby Doc, announced yesterday he will return to Haiti. Meanwhile, Haiti's president Jean-Bertrand Aristide has been incommunicado since Monday when he accused the United States of kidnapping him and overthrowing him in a coup. His attorney, Ira Kurzban, said Tuesday he was being denied access to a telephone in the Central African Republic, where he has been taken. In Venezuela, the National Electoral Council ruled yesterday opponents of President Hugo Chavez have fallen short in its drive to collect 2.4 million signatures to force a referendum vote on the future of Chavez. Opponents submitted 3.4 million signatures, but the Election Council ruled it could validate only about 1.8 million of the signatures. Another 900,000 signatures may be valid if citizens confirm that they indeed signed the petition. Anti-Chavez protests have been taking place every day since Friday, and they intensified yesterday following the ruling. The Associated Press reported the protests intensified when opponents of Chavez hurled rocks and gasoline bombs at soldiers. Venezuelan Vice President José Vicente Rangel and denounced the demonstrators. He said they're terrorists, they attack the public, fire against the forces of order, and want to impede progress. 2 weeks ago, Hugo Chavez accused the U.S. of being behind a 2002 coup and of continuing opposition attempts to overthrow him. Chavez said, quote, "The government of Washington is using the money of its people to support not only opposition activities, but acts of conspiracy." In business news, former WorldCom CEO Bernard Ebbers was indicted yesterday on charges that he helped plan and execute the biggest accounting fraud in U.S. corporate history. Under Ebbers, WorldCom booked at least $11 billion in false earnings, and WorldCom suffered the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history. In Gaza, a longtime Palestinian journalist and advisor to Palestinian Authority President Yasser Arafat has been assassinated. Press reports indicate Khalil al-Zaben was killed by fellow Palestinians. On Capitol Hill, Senate sponsors of legislation to shield the firearms industry from lawsuits abruptly killed their own bill yesterday after it was amended to renew an expiring ban on assault weapons and to require background checks for gun show purchases. The mayor of New Paltz, New York, was charged yesterday for breaking state law by marrying 19 same-sex couples over the past week. The mayor, Jason West, faces up to a year in jail and a $500 fine. West was elected last year on the Green Party ticket. He vowed to keep marrying same-sex couples. Meanwhile, in Oregon, the state's most populous county, Multnomah County, will begin issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples today. In other election news, voters in Humboldt County, California, rejected a campaign bankrolled by Pacific Lumber Corporation to recall the county's district attorney who had accused the timber company of fraud. The district attorney, Paul Gallegos, said, quote, "It's a triumph of the people over the influence of money and lies in politics."
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware.
Sarah Thompson, Is It for Freedom? Here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Senator John Kerry locked up the Democratic presidential nomination last night, winning 9 of 10 states on Super Tuesday, including New York and California. His top opponent, Senator John Edwards, is scheduled to announce today he is dropping out of the race after failing to win any of the 10 states up for grabs yesterday. Former Vermont Governor Howard Dean denied Kerry a sweep, winning his home state 2 weeks after dropping out of the race. The Reverend Al Sharpton won 8% of the vote in his home state of New York, trailing far behind Kerry's 60%. The New York Times reports that Sharpton did not get a majority of the vote from blacks or Hispanics, two groups he said he was focusing on in New York, though it's believed he got about 40% of the African-American vote here in New York. Ohio Congressmember Dennis Kucinich won 9% of the vote in his home state of Ohio to Kerry's 52%. 5%. Senator Edwards is scheduled to end his candidacy today in his home state of North Carolina. The Washington Post reports Edwards was under pressure from within the party to quit to allow Kerry to focus his energies and resources on President Bush, as well as preserve his own prospects of becoming the party's vice presidential nominee. After a congratulatory call to Kerry, Edwards spoke to his supporters in Atlanta.
You know, throughout this campaign, I've talked about building one America that allows every single American to have the opportunity to take advantage of their God-given talent. This is the America that you and I believe in. This is the America you and I will build together. And this is the America we will fight for as Democrats come November. You and I together. I also want to take a moment and congratulate my friend, Senator John Kerry. He's run a strong, powerful campaign. He's been an extraordinary advocate for causes that all of us believe in. More jobs, better health care, a cleaner environment, a safer world. These are the causes of our party. These are the causes of our country, and these are the causes we will prevail on come November, you and I together. And you know, it wasn't very long ago that the pundits and the pollsters were saying that come Super Tuesday, there wouldn't even be anybody named John competing for the nomination. Well, the truth is, John Kerry and John Edwards have both proven those pundits and pollsters wrong, and we're proud of that. You and I did that together.
Senator John Edwards, speaking in Atlanta, scheduled to end his candidacy for president today in North Carolina. Frontrunner John Kerry rolled up huge Super Tuesday triumphs in California, New York, Ohio, Maryland, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Minnesota, and his home state of Massachusetts, as well as a razor-thin five-point win over Edwards in Georgia. President Bush last night called John Kerry to congratulate him on his victories. Tuesday was the biggest single day of the nominating season, with 10 states and over 1,100 delegates at stake. Looking at the exit polls, the New York Times says Kerry did well among virtually every category of Democratic voter coast to coast. The Washington Post emphasizes that voters again saw electability as the key Kerry asset. John Kerry spoke to supporters at the old post office pavilion in Washington, strategically close to the White House.
Our opponents can't campaign on jobs or health care or fiscal responsibility. Instead, George Bush, who promised to become a uniter, has become the great divider. And just last week, he proposed to amend the Constitution of the United States for political purposes. And we say that he has no right to misuse the most precious document in our history in an effort to divide this nation and distract us from our goals. We resoundingly reject the politics of fear and distortion. We will instead, all across this nation throughout these next months, keep trust with Lincoln's ideal of America as the last best hope of earth. When I first led veterans to the mall here in Washington to stop the war in Vietnam, it was a time of doubt and fear in this land. It was a time when millions of Americans could not trust or believe what their leaders were telling them. And now, today, Americans are once again wondering if they can trust or believe the leadership of our country. Our campaign is about restoring that faith speaking plainly and honestly to the American people, offering real choices about the future, about leading America in a new direction, guided by the enduring values that this nation has held dear for over 200 years. Our campaign is about building a fairer, safer, more prosperous America, the nation that is again the great light to all the world. That is what this is about.
Senator John Kerry speaking last night in Washington, D.C. In Mendocino County, voters passed the nation's first ban on raising genetically engineered crops or animals. Biotech giant Monsanto spent over $500,000 in an attempt to defeat the measure. In a rollback of another well-funded corporate campaign, in Humboldt County, California, voters rejected a campaign bankrolled by Pacific Lumber to recall the county's district attorney who had accused the timber company of fraud. And you are listening to Democracy Now! As we turn now to Haiti. At the United Nations here in New York, Haitians and Haitian Americans protested what they called the overthrow of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Democracy Now! Is at the protest.
We want Aristide! We want Aristide! We want Aristide! We want Aristide!
This country needs a regime change, not Haiti, not Venezuela, not all the new democracies of this hemisphere. Bush is the one that needs to go. Let anybody who had good conscience see that this is a coup that was backed by the U.S. and everybody that call themselves people who support democracy should really stand behind the Haitian people today.
It isn't a question of being for Aristide or against Aristide, but rather, are you for democracy or against it? And we have to stand for democracy. If we live in this country, all Haitians need to stand for democracy, both here and abroad. Aristide was democratically elected. Can we say that George Bush was? No, he was not.
The United States must stop interfering in sovereign states. Yesterday, it was Iraq. Today, it's Haiti. Tomorrow, it will be Venezuela. We have to put an end to the United States' destruction of people and people's governments throughout the world. We demand further that the United Nations bring Aristide to address the General Assembly. He is not a criminal. He has not been charged with anything. We demand that Kofi Annan bring Aristide to address the General Assembly of the United Nations.
The U.S. is arming the rebels. The U.S. is arming Guy Philippe. The U.S. is arming Chamblain. Those guys are criminals. They killed so many Haitians during the coup d'etat in 1991. They killed over 5,000 Haitians. I don't know why U.S. is helping those guys to overthrow our democratically elected president.
Haitians and Haitian supporters at the United Nations yesterday, people protested around the country, including in San Francisco. Vice President Dick Cheney was giving a rare round of interviews to Fox News and CNN. He told both networks that President Jean-Bertrand Aristide had, quote, worn out his welcome as Haiti's president. Here is Dick Cheney speaking to Wolf Blitzer on CNN.
Let's move on and talk about Haiti. This is a critical issue. The former president, now Jean-Bertrand Aristide, accusing the Bush administration of effectively orchestrating a coup against him. Mm-hmm. You're smiling.
Well, I've dealt with Aristide before when I was Secretary of Defense. We had a crisis involving Haiti. He left of his own free will. He signed a resignation letter on his way out. He left with his security detail on an aircraft we provided, not a military aircraft, a civilian charter. I suppose he's trying to revise history, but the fact of the matter was he'd worn out his welcome with the Haitian people. He was democratically elected, but he never governed as a Democrat. He was corrupt. He was in charge of many of the thugs that were committing crimes in Port-au-Prince shortly before he left. But the suggestion that somehow the United States arrested him or forcibly put him on an aircraft to get him to leave, that's simply not true.
So you're happy he's gone?
I'm happy he's gone. I think the Haitian people are better off for it. I think they now have an opportunity to elect a new government, and that's as it should be.
And that was Dick Cheney speaking to Wolf Blitzer on CNN yesterday. The removal of Aristide from Haiti has put the country's international diplomats in a difficult position. When we come back from our break, we'll speak with the Consul General for Haiti here in New York, and we'll also take a look at the letter that Jean-Bertrand Aristide supposedly signed. All that and more coming up. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and you can also hear us and see us online at democracynow.org. The removal of Jean-Bertrand Aristide from Haiti has put the country's international diplomats in a difficult position. Aristide says he did not resign and that the handwritten message in Creole that the U.S. says was his letter of resignation was mistranslated in English. The U.S. says Aristide is gone and that the Haitian Supreme Court Justice, Boniface Alexander, is the interim president. So who speaks for Haiti internationally and at the United Nations? We turn now to Harry Fouché, who is the Consul General of the Haitian government in New York. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you for the opportunity.
Can you tell us who you consider the president of Haiti right now?
Well, right now we have a very confused situation. The, of course, the government is headed by the prime minister, as you know, the way the constitution is headed. We have the president, and then we have a prime minister. Prime Minister Neptune is still in office. In fact, he's at the prime minister's office, and yesterday you may have seen from news report that some of the thugs were trying to come and assault him at his office, but luckily that didn't happen. So it is a very confused situation. We are in touch with the foreign ministry. Foreign Minister Antonio is still on post. So it's very difficult. And, of course, we are also in touch with President Aristide. So it's a very, very, very confused situation. And the Supreme Court Justice, Mr. Alexander Boniface, of course, as we know, was presented to the world as an interim president. So we are in a what word would I use here? It's an undefined situation at this point.
Have you spoken with Jean-Bertrand Aristide?
Not directly, no. I have spoken through one of my colleagues in Europe who had received a message from the president, and that we all were briefed on those messages.
And what were those messages?
Well, essentially, the condition of his his stay in Central Africa, you know, the whole idea that the president didn't have access to the international world. He didn't have access to. He felt the whole. His whole condition of staying in Central Africa. Of course, we all know about, you know, how he left and how he spent almost a full day flying around, not knowing where he was going. But now it's the condition of his stay in Central Africa that has been raised as an issue, and that we are trying to address.
We're talking to Harry Fouché, who is the Consul General of the Haitian government in New York. Also, Michael Ratner joins us in the studio. He is the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Michael, you've been looking at the letter that Aristide supposedly signed that the U.S. government says is his letter of resignation. Can you tell us what you see?
Yeah, first, Amy, I just want to say a forced resignation is not a legal resignation under international law. Just like if someone puts a gun to your head and says, sign this contract, that's not a valid contract. That's clearly what happened here. There was a coup going on. There was threats of force and violence to be used against both him, his family, and others. To the extent he purportedly signed something, even if he did, it's simply not valid under international law. He is still the sitting president of Haiti. The second thing is, and it's interesting, the official translation by the United States changes some of the language. While it may, it's significant, what the letter says, as the way the U.S. translated the Creole, for that reason, tonight I am resigning in order to avoid a bloodbath. It's basically affirmative statement, I am resigning. In fact, what the Creole says is this is why, if tonight, that my resigning would avert a bloodbath. So what it does is the actual Creole is in a conditional tense and right. On a condition that is essentially one that the United States is threatening him with that is not necessarily true unless the United States decides it to be true. So even assuming that he signed this somehow voluntarily, which he didn't, and even assuming that it says what it says, it's not actually, in my view, a resignation.
Harry Fouché, would you agree with that?
Well, certainly the language in Creole and in English, you know, are practically at odds, you know, as Michael Ratner just mentioned, the statements are two different statements. You know, there was a clear statement in English saying, well, I'm resigning, where in fact in Creole he didn't say that at all. So there, you know, this is something, of course, that needs to be looked at. You know, and of course, you know, the other situation for us that is of utmost urgency is the fact that these people who took up arms, who claim to be rebels, who claim to be liberators, they are all over the country. They are all over Port-au-Prince now. They are threatening, you know, law-abiding people. They've been doing wholesale killing. So this is a matter that is urgent, that needs to stop, you know, and, you know, this is where we feel, you know, the NGOs and the UN, you know, they need to react immediately, the Center for Constitutional Rights, to let the world know, to let the administration know that, listen, these people are, you know, conducting wanton killings in Haiti, and this has to stop.
I want to talk for a minute about what Guy Philippe said yesterday, Guy Philippe, who announced that he is the new military leader of Haiti, that Haiti is in his hands. And I want to bring Brian Kincannon into the conversation, who has been a longtime lawyer working with the Haitian government, prosecuting people responsible for crimes against humanity in Haiti. Can you tell us who Guy Philippe is, Brian Kincannon?
Guy Philippe is the U.S. man in Haiti. He was a member of the military dictatorship from 1991 to 1994, and towards the end of the dictatorship, he and a few other people were chosen, hand-picked for a special training session in Ecuador that was at a U.S. training facility. And they were given the special training, and then they were integrated into the police in Haiti by the U.S., because the U.S. at the time was basically running the police force, and they wanted this elite core of former military people to be their guys in Haiti. Most of those people, sooner or later, were removed from the police because they were caught doing massive human rights violations, or they were caught plotting against the state. For Philippe, that happened in October of 2000. It was revealed that he and a bunch of others were planning a coup. He fled to the Dominican Republic, from where he launched at least two other serious coup attempts and quite a few other smaller attacks in the countryside. Many of them were fairly murderous.
Harry Fouché, if you hear what Guy Philippe had to say yesterday. Quote, the country is in my hands, claiming he is the chief of Haiti and that he will oversee the reformation of the Haitian military, also threatened to arrest Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune, whose home has already been torched and looted. Right. What does this mean to you legally?
Well, certainly we are very disturbed by this. We are very disturbed by the fact that here is a man who not only has done the kind of thing that Brian just mentioned, but has been systematically on a campaign of looting and rampaging the country. Cape Haitian in the north, which quote-unquote was liberated by these people, which is an historical city, a city that has had some of the oldest architecture in the Caribbean, a lot of that was destroyed by these people. You know, we have courthouses destroyed. Can you imagine that? We have had public buildings destroyed. So what we need to think is this. Here you have a country like Haiti whose economy has been reduced to a state of almost non-functioning. You have all this destruction taking place. So what does that mean? That means these people are doing nothing but to put the final nail in the country's economic coffin. So we cannot allow that. Guy Philippe has no standing to speak of as being a chief of anything. This is a man who has committed crime. This is a man who has, in fact, there are drug dealing charges against him that are still outstanding, you see. So this is a very serious matter, and we need to make sure and say it in no uncertain term. It is not acceptable for the Guy Philippe and the Jodel Chamblain, who's another shadowy character, to be propulsed in the forefront and to have these people walk around Port-au-Prince or any place in Haiti presenting themselves as saviors. These people have no capacity or no propensity to save anything. These are destructors. These are people who are bent on killing. These are people who are bent on causing mayhem. And these are, for the most part, people who have had charges against them, who have been tried, who have been convicted. So that's the story that should be told. Not so much that this man, you know, grandstanding, saying he's the, you know, he stopped short of saying he's the supreme commander of Haiti. Maybe that's what he should have said. But we know those are criminals. And it has to be made clear that there is no place in Haiti for any type of criminals to be on the forefront or to be trying to say they're going to be doing anything constructive in Haiti, because they've been destroying Haiti. That's what they've been doing.
The Supreme Court Justice Boniface Alexander has been sworn in as the interim president. Michael Ratner, what does this mean? And is that the full process to make someone president?
Well, there's two issues here. One is the Haitian process, and it hasn't undergone the full Haitian process, which is ratification by the Haitian legislature, which, of course, can't happen because there is no Haitian legislature right now. So in my view, even under the Constitution of Haiti, there's no new president. But even further, under international law, basically the United Nations and the Organization of American States, and that's the context in which this usually comes up, who's the government, who's going to be seated as the ambassador, who's going to be the representative, they struggle through that. But lately, certainly in the last 10 years since the Cold War, they have pretty much insisted that they will not recognize the leadership or governments appointed to governments by coups. And they did that in 91 in Haiti. They refused to recognize the coup, and they kept Jean-Bertrand Aristide and the ambassador that he appointed kept his seat in the United Nations. So the question that comes up now, and the choice, I think, for Haiti, and I think, or for the UN, rather, is whether they're going to recognize the government of a coup, or whether they're going to continue as they should if practice and international law is listened to, that you don't recognize the government of a coup. They should continue to recognize, and actually will for now, recognize the current ambassador from Haiti. That should happen both in the OAS and in the United Nations. Only when and if some new rump government in Haiti tries to put another ambassador in there will we see how the OAS and the UN actually reacts to that. But right as of now, President Jean-Bertrand Aristide is still the legal president of Haiti. He still has the right to appoint ambassadors to the UN and the OAS, and they still are obligated to take his instructions. That's the law. That's the rule. If and when that comes up, and we somehow have already seen some implications in UN resolution and in OAS statements that they're moving toward the direction of the United States in terms of thinking about Boniface as a constitutional ruler. But if and when that comes up, it will be a struggle in the UN over which government to seat, and that will determine the legitimacy under international law. But at that point, if they recognize the coup leaders or the government appointed as a result of a coup, it would, in my view, just put the UN on the wrong side of history, on the wrong side of democracy, and on the side of use of force to change governments.
So, Harry Fouché, you're the Consul General of the Haitian government in New York. Who do you recognize?
Well, the other thing we should add, Amy and Michael, is this. Right now, the process supposedly that is evolving in Haiti was the process that President Aristide signed with the international community. The process a couple of weeks ago when we had a group of foreign ministers from the Caribbean and representative of the United States, Canada, and France in Haiti in conversation both with the government, with the president, President Aristide, and with the opposition. And as a result of that, President Aristide agreed to certain certain processes. One of them was to have a special three members panel be empowered that will be choose another panel of nine members, which will be responsible for selecting the new prime minister and the subsequent government.
Harry, as I recall, first of all, the opposition didn't agree to that.
Well,
and secondly, he remained president under that new process.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm coming
right
to. You know, but my point is this. He signed it, so this is what's being applied, but how can he be excluded from it? Because the pretense of applying it is because of his signing it.
Terry, he's still the president under that process. That's right.
Of course.
So, Harry Fouché, as the Consul General of the Haitian government in New York, do you still recognize the authority of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Yvon Neptune is still the prime minister. Yvon Neptune was chosen by President Aristide. Okay.
And so does that mean that Jean-Bertrand Aristide is still the president
of
Haiti?
For all practical purpose, yes.
And what about what's happening to Yvon Neptune right now, looting and torching of his home?
His house was looted, as you said, and torched, but he's in his office, and he's in communication with us, you know, so we're waiting to see what's going on. In fact, he had meetings with the UN representative in Port-au-Prince yesterday, so we're still waiting. It's a very confused situation. And we have to play it by ears. We're waiting to see. My instructions, of course, come from the foreign ministry. And the foreign ministry, there is no change there. The foreign minister is still the same. You know, the government that is in place is the government put in place by President Aristide with Yvon Neptune as the prime minister.
Michael Ratner, you talked about the United Nations recognizing which government they recognize. Are there other conventions or laws that come into play here?
Well, there's a number of them, obviously, with regard to democracy and recognizing the leader, you know, and basically not recognizing the leaders of coups, and those have to do with resolutions passed by both the OAS and the United Nations that essentially try and ensure democratic governments. And so to have them go against President Jean-Bertrand Aristide now and recognize so-called President Alexandre, it would be really contrary to their law. In addition, there is a special law called the New York Convention that has to do with the kidnapping of President Aristide. And that's an interesting one because assuming, which I think is accurate, that he was essentially forced onto that airplane and taken by the United States, essentially kidnapped forcibly to the Central African Republic, there is a New York Convention that the U.S. is actually party to along with Haiti. And under that convention, you can eventually take the situation to the International Court of Justice at The Hague, and there's a criminal law in the United States that allows prosecution of those people who engage in such international kidnapping. And while it has to be outside the country, when he was outside the country on a U.S. chartered aircraft at the time part of that kidnapping was occurring. So I actually think there's a very, very serious matter here that could be taken in front of the International Court of Justice with regard to his kidnapping, and there could be actually federal criminal prosecutions of those involved in forcibly taking him out of Haiti.
Mm-hmm. How do you prove he was kidnapped?
Well, it's his testimony, obviously, and what happened. And there were other people there. There were people from security detail. You do it like any other situation. But it seems rather obvious that a sitting president in Haiti doesn't simply get on a plane and walk off and walk out.
Let me play for you what General Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, said in response to President Jean-Bertrand Aristide's charge.
He was not kidnapped. We did not force him onto the airplane. He went onto the airplane willingly. And that's the truth.
He was not kidnapped. He went onto the plane willingly.
You know, I wasn't there, but let me tell you, if someone put a gun to your head and said, look, unless you walk on that plane, quote, willingly, we're going to walk away from you and let your family and all of your friends be killed, and then we're going to let them go in Port-au-Prince and kill all your supporters, the question is, are you going to walk on that plane? And is that willingly? That's not willingly in my view. Having a gun to your head is not willingly.
We are talking to Michael Ratner, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and Harry Fouché, who is the consul general of the Haitian government in New York. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Brian Kincannon, who is a longtime attorney for the International Lawyers Office in Haiti, where he spent the last several years prosecuting crimes committed during the 1991-94 coup. And we'll speak with a U.S. Special Forces soldier who went down to Haiti during the coup, Stan Goff, and just came out of Haiti once again, one of the last planes out before they were canceled. This is Democracy Now! Stay with us. Oublié here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue on the issue of Haiti. Our guest, Brian Kincannon, works for the International Lawyers Office in Haiti, where he's been prosecuting crimes committed during the 91-94 coup. Among the cases he prosecuted are those stemming from the 1994 Rabateau massacre in a pro-democracy neighborhood in Gonaïves, where this most recent attack on Haiti first began to brew. Brian Kincannon, you started by talking about who Guy Philippe is. We have hardly seen any mention of this in the mainstream media. If you can continue to talk about his significance, this man who said he wanted to be in Port-au-Prince on his birthday and now says that he is the, quote, the country is in my hands, announcing that he is the chief of Haiti and that he will oversee the reformation of the Haitian military. Please give us more on his background.
Sure. He did do a stint, because the U.S. pushed him into a leadership position, he did do a stint as police chief in Delma, which is the biggest suburb of Port-au-Prince, and also as a regional commander in the north of Haiti. And in both of those cases, he was widely accused of serious human rights violation. In Delma, he had a special unit under his right-hand man who was going around executing suspected gang members. So no trial, no arrest. Just a quick handcuff and a bullet to the head, which is happening now. The press reports coming out of Haiti have the journalists who aren't straying too far from the major hotels. Even they are finding bodies that are handcuffed and executed. Also, Guy Philippe was, according to even the U.S., said that he was involved in drugs when he was up in the north, which is one of the ways that this insurgency has been financed. So it obviously is very much concerned, someone with his past human rights record and the things he's doing now, including assassination. But also, wherever he goes, he's emptying the jails. And there are a lot of people that we've either convicted in other cases or that we have that have been arrested awaiting trial in other cases who are now free to go about terrorizing their victims again.
Brian Kincannon, we are also joined by Stan Goff. Stan Goff has a distinguished career in elite Ranger, Airborne, and Special Forces counter-terrorist units. He went to Vietnam, Guatemala, El Salvador, Grenada, Panama, Venezuela, Honduras, South Korea, Colombia, Peru, Somalia, and in 1994 in the U.S. military sent to Haiti. Welcome to Democracy Now, Stan Goff. It's good to have you with us. Can you talk about who these people are? You went with the U.S. military to Haiti, supposedly to ensure that many of these people would not remain in power.
Yeah, well, that was sort of technically true on the surface. They did bring President Aristide back and then immediately forbade him to run for a term since he lost the majority of his term by being absent during a coup. They imposed numerous conditions on him and behind the scenes immediately began to subvert his credibility and authority at every opportunity. All we ever heard was anti-Aristide propaganda in every intelligence summary that we received. And my own alliance building with my team, with members of Comité de la Valache, resulted in my expulsion in December of that year. When we were in Gonaïves, which is the first place when we left Port-au-Prince Airport that we went into, my own team was involved with the first team to actually leave the caserne and make an arrest. And one of the six people that we arrested who were out there menacing a large crowd with M1 Garands included a fellow named Jean Tatoune, who was also involved in the Robinson massacre and now is acting as the de facto paramilitary commander, whatever you want to call him, over in Gonaïves. This is a criminal of wide repute, he's another one that they let out of jail in this process. I think it's real important, too, to point out that this coup d'etat did not just begin. This coup d'etat began immediately upon the reinstallation of Aristide and has taken on different forms. I was there during the inauguration of Aristide in 2001, February 2001. And this fake opposition, the Convergence Démocratique, that's really numerous factions of the ruling elite that have been cobbled together with the massive assistance of the National Endowment for Democracy, its sole purpose is to work through U.S. embassies to influence the outcomes of other countries' elections. There was an immediate attempt to reverse, the result of the election because it was a result that was not considered a favorable result. Aristide got 92% of the vote in the last election, 67% in the first election. And I think it's really important to point out not only that the coup has been ongoing, but that in a sense, all the issue of whether Aristide was effective or ineffective or a good guy or a bad guy is a huge red herring. Aristide's sin is not Aristide. Aristide's sin is that he represents popular sovereignty in Haiti, and this is what's under attack. There's nothing that's more feared in Haiti by the ruling elites than popular sovereignty, and there's also nothing that's more feared by the United States than an exercise of popular sovereignty in a region like that, and that's why Haiti's being made an example of right now. And I think it's also important to point out that there's a huge racial component to this that doesn't get talked about much in the mainstream media, but it's been very important ideologically in this country, and especially since the Republican Party took on the mantle of the party of white supremacy with the Nixon's Southern strategy, and they've maintained that mantle ever since, is to portray Haiti, to disable Haiti and then to portray Haiti as somehow deviant, diseased, unself-governable. This is very important to reinforce an ideology of white supremacy for political purposes here inside the United States. So there are a lot of different dimensions to this that aren't getting discussed.
Ira Kurzban, the attorney for the government of Haiti, has charged that the weapons that these men have do not come, as they say, from the old Haitian army. Would you concur? Did you see them when you were just down there?
There's a mix. You know, of course, there are a lot of the old Garands, which were in large supply. When I was working in 94 up in Fort Liberté near the Dominican border, we received constant reports from alarmed citizens about massive stockpiles of weapons being transported across the Riviera Massacre into the Dominican Republic. And I believe the government of the Dominican Republic has at least certain portions of the Dominican government have been complicit in this, and the Dominican military is absolutely subservient to the U.S. military. We got to get this straight. The U.S. engineered this coup. You know, the old joke is the reason there's never been a coup in the United States is there's no U.S. embassy here. It's very true. But the other weapons that I did see, I saw, Kar-15s and RPGs. And RPGs are not U.S.-made weapons, but they're part of the U.S. reserve stockpile that are used for covert operations. And it's sort of interesting that tens of thousands of new M16s were provided to the Dominican government. And then what you have to wonder about is where those the weapons that they then shed go. And these are the weapons, I believe, that have been transferred to these paramilitaries that are coming back across the border. And I think the other thing that's important to point out is I've heard a gentleman mention Jodel Chamblain. Chamblain is, I think, the military power behind this. I don't think Guy Philippe could find his ass with a radar militarily. But the problem is, the guy that Guy Philippe is a less execrable character than Chamblain, because Chamblain is widely known as the second in command of the FROP. The first in command is living in Queens under U.S. protection right now, Toto Constant. And, you know, these people were not the opposition, even though the U.S. Intervention Task Force in 1994 effectively rehabilitated them with a stroke of a pen and tried to portray FROP as the legitimate political opposition. They were in the process of trying to invent an opposition to Aristide all the way back then. This is a death squad network. What they did was systematically murdered over 5,000 people between 1991 and 1994. You know, that's what their purpose is. And the fact that they're back now and trying to declare themselves the new military of this de facto government is just incredible. I don't think it'll stand. I don't think it'll stand. Haiti's in a state of civil war right now.
Brian Kincannon, on the issue of Louis Jodel Chamblain, as well as Jean Tatoun, who led the uprising in Gonaïves, who these men are in terms of the prosecutions that you've been engaged in.
As we followed up on Stan's arrest of Jean Tatoun, we prosecuted him in the Rabateau massacre case, which was one of the best human rights cases anywhere in the hemisphere in the last 20 years. We convicted in absentia the whole high command, but in person we got a whole bunch of military officers and enlisted men and paramilitary people, among them Jean Tatoun, who was by far the most reviled of all the defendants in the courtroom. He's got a long history of terrorizing anybody who doesn't agree with him. He did it. He was one of the leaders of the Rabateau massacre. We had compelling victim testimony that he was shooting himself, but also directing the police to houses where they should shoot people. He had been doing that throughout the entire. He was also doing extortion, drugs, smuggling, anything he could do to make a buck or to gain some power during the coup. And he was tried and convicted by a jury. We thought that Haiti, there's an old Haitian saying that the Constitution is paper, but bayonets are steel. And Haiti had a 9-year democratic interlude in which we were trying to disprove that statement. Unfortunately, it's back. The U.S. and its allies have confirmed that is true, that the bullet is stronger than the ballot in Haiti. And people like Jean Tatoun, we did use the system, victims went out on a limb. They took a big risk, which they're now obviously regretting, to protest, to use the system, to act nonviolently, to put these guys away. That's going to come back to haunt them because they're now back on the street. And Tatoon's been out for a while now. He's been out for about a year and a half, and he's been terrorizing his former victims. It's nothing. The tactics that we're now seeing on the streets of Port-au-Prince, the killings, the torturing, the hunting down of democracy supporters. They're not new. They're just now within the range of the major media, who doesn't go to places like Gonaïves and doesn't talk to people who can't speak French and can't speak English to find out what's happening to them.
Stan Goff, when you arrested Jean Tatoune, the circumstances and your assessment of him?
The book I wrote about it goes into a lot of detail about that. He and one other FROP member, along with four members of the FAD, had backed...
The FAD being the Haitian army.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Had backed... There were tens of thousands of people in the street as we arrived there, and this was about three-quarters of a mile from the caserne that was recently burned down. They backed this crowd into what was basically a huge cul-de-sac, and from when we encountered them, it looked to me like they were about to begin firing in the crowd. So it was myself and three other team members ordered them to put their weapons on the ground. Tatoune actually hesitated, and I came very near shooting him, and I'm sort of regretting that I didn't. But we arrested them, but the minute they laid their weapons on the ground, the police also carried these ironwood batons that they frequently crack people over the head with. One of the crowd members waded in and snatched up a baton and hit Jean Tatoune and his, I forget the other fellow's name, the other Frappist, hit both of them over the head and opened their heads up pretty good. And we ended up in this peculiar situation where suddenly, to put them under arrest, we had to protect them from some pretty surly crowds. And it was my own medics that sewed to tune up before we put him in a cell. It was an exciting day overall. We heard a lot from just walking around. I had a fluent French speaker on my team, native. We spent several days walking around just talking to people. The other guy that was heavily involved in the Raboteau massacre was the caserne commander, a guy named Castro, who was also, to best of my knowledge, was also put in jail by and by. But everybody in town...
Can you repeat that, Brian Kincannon?
Who was probably the second most reviled person after Jean Tatoune. Yeah. We convicted him as well. He was in jail serving a life sentence that ended on Sunday when he was liberated, along with a whole bunch of other people. There were three members of the high command who had been deported from the United States, who had been convicted in absentia in the Raboteau trial, and over the last couple of years they'd been deported, including Jean-Claude Duperval, who was the assistant commander-in-chief, and as far as I know, he's the highest-ranking person ever deported from the U.S. to face a crimes against humanity prosecution.
And they have all been released from prison?
They've all been released. Prosper Avril, who's another big U.S. supported person, he was a dictator from 1988 to 1990. Michael Ratner helped prosecute him. A Miami court found him civilly responsible for systematic and widespread torture.
So all been released in this overthrow.
All been released.
Let me end with Harry Fouché, the Consul General of Haiti here in New York. Are you afraid for your country?
Well, certainly. Everything that you've heard described, brings fears to us and also bring terror to the country. So we are hoping common sense and a sense of justice and a sense of fairness will prevail. So actions will be taken quickly to remove these sinister characters from positions of that they are occupying now, where they are terrorizing the country.
On that note, I want to thank you all very much for being with us. Harry Fouché, the Haitian Consul General here in New York, Stan Goff, former Special Forces U.S. soldier in Haiti, and Brian Kincannon with the International Lawyers Office in Haiti. That does it for the show. Our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Abdul-Kadous, Jeremy Scahill, Anna Nogueira, Elizabeth Press, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.